Hey, welcome back again to Auto Transport Intel. It is Wednesday. It is noon Central Time. That means it's time for DOT compliance with your DOT guy, Brian Riker. So what we're going to do is we've got a few topics we're going to talk about. We're going to do a follow-up on the broker show we just talked about last night, talk about brokering, freight forwarders, and the definitions, and how all that works out, just in case you have any questions. We're going to talk also about the new nod for the, I think it's Transportation Secretary. So Brian and I will talk about that too. But before we do, listen, do me a favor. You see on the YouTube channel, you're watching the YouTube video right now. Below that, there's a share button and a like button. Please hit both, and then you can copy the link to this show. Text it, email it, share it on social media. Do me a favor. And let your friend know, hey, these guys will be live for 30 more minutes. Got a DOT, MC Authority, IFTA, IRP, GVWR, weight distribution. You got a question, ask it live. Get an answer now before it's too late. Also, you can sign up at autotransportintel.com. Click on sign up, become an ATI insider. Get the emails, join our Slack network, say hello. And thanks for saying hello in the live chat. We got Carlos Braxton, ACB Logistics. What's up, Carlos? Serge is in here. Hey, how you doing, Serge? Thanks for tuning in. Longtime listener, first time caller. And David Two Bears Transportation is in here. What's up, David? Thank you for saying hello. And let us know if you have any questions. Without any further ado, we're live with Brian Riker, your DOT guy. Brian, can you see us and hear us okay?
Yes, I can, Jay. Good afternoon, and thank you.
All right. Well, cool, man. Well, thanks for taking the time. Oh, also, we got Nassim Nazarov. Good day, Mr. Jay. How are you doing? I'm doing pretty good, Nassim. Thank you. How you doing, Brian? How you feeling?
I am well. I'm enjoying a nice cross-country trip to deliver someone a brand new tow truck like I do every week. It's been a great year, and I'm looking forward to a little bit of downtime over the holidays. Everybody's healthy and happy.
You get time on the road. I think you enjoy it. Am I right?
Yes, I do. I'll always be a driver at heart. No matter what else I do, I still enjoy the art of driving, whether it's a car, a large truck, it doesn't matter. I enjoy it.
Yeah, I believe it. And Catherine Guerrero, hello and good day, Catherine. What's up? Devin, Victory Lap Transport LLC is here. What's going on, you guys? This is a great opportunity to get answers to questions. DOT compliance, when you consider the mountain of pages that the FMCSA has created and the DOT has to enforce, there has to be questions. And Serge says, I'm trying to get into this profession. Great, Serge. What you want to do, actually, Serge, here's what you do. You can ask questions here and get answers live, but you might think, well, I don't know where to start. So what you do is go sign up at autotransportintel.com, click sign up, become an ATI insider, get a free first talk with Ty, and then you get the emails and you can join the Slack network, and then you can find out, well, what questions do I have that I need to ask Brian live on Wednesdays at noon? So that's how it works. All right, so we're going to make this a tight show. We only got 25 minutes left. I want to talk about last night's show. Last night I did a show where, if you guys didn't see it, and I understand, we're all busy, we have things going on, but last night's show was called Expecting Unicorn Transport, okay? Expecting Unicorn Transport. Now, what, Jay, what is that all about? Well, it's about this, okay? So, when you're in delivery, when you're in service, you have good, you have cheap, you have fast. You can be good and cheap, but it may not be fast. You can have fast and good, but it may not be cheap. And you can have cheap and fast, but it may not be good. And these considerations are important because this is where your job becomes a priority. Now, what I find so interesting is, because I pointed out your job, because we have a habit of getting involved in other people's jobs, there seems to be so much concern about what the other guy is doing. For example, this question, anyone knows what freight forwarder does? Now, that's actually a good question. It just reminds me of the, what's a broker, what's a dispatcher, what's a carrier? But getting into what does a freight forwarder do? Brian, you gave a reply. Can you elaborate? First, let's start with the definition. What's the difference between a freight forwarder and a broker? How do they interact? And it might be helpful for, you know, the carrier side, the dispatcher side to know this stuff.
Sure. I agree with you, Jay. Happy to. All the right. Key difference between a freight forwarder and a broker, besides a freight forwarder not requiring a bond by regulation, the key difference is the freight forwarder somewhere in the chain physically takes possession of the freight, consolidates it or breaks it down, and makes arrangement for another portion of the transportation, either on outside carriers or often in conjunction with motor carrier authority and their own truck. So to be a freight forwarder, you have to physically take possession of the freight. You issue the other half, the back half of the transportation, on your bill of lading as if it is your load, not just a through shipment from somebody else. So think of everything that comes into an Amazon warehouse by outside trucks. Then they go on those brand new, beautiful little Amazon vans. At that point, and Amazon's probably a bad example because they're not, they are, but they aren't a freight forwarder because it is other people's freight. Some of it they own, but they bring it into a building, put it on other trucks, take it out and deliver it. Or they bring it in, put it on big trucks, consolidate it into one tractor trailer going from New York to California, and away they go. So in our auto transport world, that would be the guys that have the storage lots at the port where they build up a bunch of cars and then they throw them on a ship and send them somewhere. Or guys that bring in a bunch of cars for snowbirds, put them in a lot, and then they give them out to local trucks to go deliver them to the owners, or the local trucks bring them in, they consolidate into a 9-car load to send them down to Florida, and away they go.
Okay, so right. So it seems like in this conversation, a freight forwarder is a larger organization that hires brokers, that hire carriers, right? So freight forwarder is the umbrella?
Yes, a freight forwarder will use a mix of contract carriers, sometimes their own carriers. They'll receive stuff from outside carriers. A freight forwarder is distinctly different from a motor carrier, which is what our owner operators are with their own authority, and a broker, which are the sales arm of a lot of small trucking companies. The freight forwarder's a little different because they physically take possession, most oftentimes store, and then redirect the freight to go somewhere else.
Now, that's interesting, right? It's the possession. It's that they, right? The freight becomes part of their custody at some part in the process.
Correct. Whereas a broker, right, on a bill of lading that is properly executed from a broker, it shows Manheim Auto Auction as the shipper and Joe's Used Cars as the receiver, and it shows Tom's Trucking as the motor carrier that hauled it. In a freight forwarder transaction, there would be that bill of lading where it came from Manheim Auto Auction, and Tom's Trucking was the carrier, and the receiver was ABC Forwarding. Then when that car leaves ABC Forwarding, it's going to be on a bill of lading showing ABC Forwarding as the shipper and the final destination of Joe's Used Cars as the receiver. So somewhere along the line, the freight forwarder took physical possession of it and they took legal responsibility for it, where it is their freight, they're responsible for the loss. The broker passes that loss on to the motor carrier that they ship with. They pass that responsibility on to us as the trucker, whereas the freight forwarder does on part of it, but in the overarching scheme, the freight forwarder is responsible for that shipment as if it was their own freight.
That is, and I like that we're talking about this because I'm learning something here. I did not know that the freight forwarder, in fact, becomes receiver and or shipper or both, taking custody, right? Because a broker never sees the freight.
The broker is prohibited by regulation from taking possession of the freight. The broker does not belong on the bill of lading anywhere. If a broker is on the bill of lading, then the broker is passing themselves off as a motor carrier, which is against regulation. They have to distinctly tell the customer that they are a broker, not a motor carrier. They are specifically prohibited from representing themselves as the trucking company, whereas the freight forwarder may represent themselves as the trucking company because they become responsible for the freight. It's a completely different process, even though it accomplishes the same thing, moving freight from point A to point B.
Well, and I've heard, the first time I heard a freight forwarder as something to learn more about was in the repossession industry, that I don't know, I caught wind that a repo agent was telling me, well, you know, you think that as a carrier and a dispatcher that the repossession agent is getting all the money, right, so to speak. If they said no, it's the freight forwarder, they're the ones controlling the rates and taking that portion of what you think we're getting out of the transaction. We're getting, the repo agent was like, we're getting as thin a margin as you are.
That's correct. They're not technically a freight forwarder in that industry, but they work the same way. They control the jobs. In the towing industry, it would be the same as a motor club service, that they get the contract with GM for the roadside assistance on the new car. They take their cut and they pay the tower pennies on the dollar to go do the job. Same concept in the with the forwarding agents in the repo industry, and the same concept, but not to as much of an extent in the transportation industry, because that freight forwarder still has to pay market rate to move his freight, or nobody is going to touch it. And that's where we as truck owners need to stand up for ourselves and not accept something that's paying below average rate. Because when we do, that knocks the average rate down consistently until you look up in a year from now, your great paying lane now pays half of what it used to.
Well,
not to
and
get
I,
off on a tangent.
Well, and I, you know, and I own that, because I said something about the freight forwarder setting the rates, which, as we all know, it's the carrier that really should be setting the rates.
Correct.
But it doesn't appear to be that way in many instances.
Correct.
Which, again, is a whole nother show and a conversation. Hey, Danny B's got a question here. Danny B says, hey, guys, I got a question. Ram 5500 with no bed, which is not registered as a tractor pulling 50-foot trailer with 3-foot extensions. Am I allowed overhang? In which states enforce what?
Oh, that's a very good question. If it's not a tractor, he's going to have an issue in some states considering him truck trailer, keeping him to a total overall length of 65 foot truck trailer and load. Other states will let it slide. I can't give you a list of states off the top of my head because I'm not prepared to answer that question. The same thing with the overhang. A lot of the Midwestern states are enforcing overhang. Missouri is a well-known one, because autos are a divisible load, so they don't want to allow you to have overhang front or rear of the trailer. That said, if you stay at or below 53 foot of load, most states are going to leave you alone. That's not a hard and fast law. That's just experience I have from talking to my customers. And if you stay at or below an overall length of 65 foot, you're going to be left alone in most states. The no bed on it does make it qualified to be a tractor trailer combination if you have a fifth wheel hitch on it, fenders, the whole nine yards. You make it look like a tractor, but some states will enforce that the title and the registration are not branded TT for tractor trailer, and they're going to enforce it as a truck trailer combination. There's no hard and fast answer. All 48 of the contiguous states have a different rule on how they approach it.
Awesome. And I put the link to your site in the live chat, because if you are, you know, it never ceases to amaze me how overhang is, it's a giant section of gray area. There
yes.
seems to be a lot of leeway and jurisdiction and how somebody's feeling that day of what they want to do with that leeway. I mean, I paint a dark picture, but I love the question. Thank you, Danny, for asking the question, and he thanks you for the answer.
Well,
yeah.
overhang is a tough situation because without the ability to carry a vehicle on the power unit, we do not meet the definition of an automobile transporter under the federal guidelines. So therefore, we're not granted any federal special permission to have overhang. So then it becomes a state by state requirement. If you had the ability, you don't have to have a car on it, but if you had an over cab rack on that 5500 that you could theoretically load a car on, then you become a traditional automobile transporter, a high mount auto transporter, and now you're allowed 65 foot overall bumper to bumper length as a minimum. Plus, you're allowed 3 foot of overhang off the front of your power unit, 4 foot of overhang off the rear of your trailer, and in most cases, overhang off the front of your trailer. There is no federal interpretation of the front of the trailer, but most states, once they've agreed you're an auto transporter, they don't measure between the truck and trailer. Now, if you were a Stinger, well, then that's cut and dry. 4 foot off the front of the tractor, 6 foot off the end of the trailer, and they don't measure in between truck and trailer. But because you can't carry power or carry a vehicle on the power unit in most of these hotshot configurations, we're just a truck and a trailer, and overhang is a state-specific issue, and divisible loads generally are not granted any overhang past the end of the trailer, past the front of the trailer. Some states give you 2 or 3 foot, but generally you're playing with fire when you have overhang on a divisible load.
So my recommendation, Surge, right? Surge is looking at getting into the profession, and that's great because you think that, okay, I've got my MC and my equipment, I got things taken care of. But what happens is now you're in a position where you're somehow, various reasons why, your load is going to get you overhang that may be questionable. And in that situation, before you pull out of the lot, go ahead and contact Brian, your DOT guy. You can go to yourdotguy.com. Now, I might be going a little bit far here, Brian, and saying that you're going to be able to get an answer right away. But if you think the next day you're going to have major overhang, call the day before you end up in the overhang situation, right? Maybe give yourself two days advance notice. Maybe just already have a relationship set up so that when you have a question, because I know, Brian, I know you stay really busy, and I don't want to overstay my welcome, but you guys can see why having Brian's information handy is extremely helpful. And actually, Fritz had a similar overhang question given the equipment. So, and Serge says thank you too. So, man, Brian, I sit in awe of your wealth of knowledge at the ready. It's awesome. Let's do this. We got 10 more minutes, so let's go ahead, and we've got another news item. I'm not sure if this is hard news, but I know you've got an opinion, and so we're gonna talk about it. Biden is expected to pick Pete Buttigieg as his transportation chief. Now, Buttigieg, former Democratic presidential candidate, I know we're gonna lose some people right there, right?
But it's a Democratic administration. We don't have a choice. We're going to have Democratic leadership at the agencies for a while.
So since that's the case, go ahead and weigh in. What do you think of that decision, choice, and possibility?
Out of the people that were on the short list from President-elect Biden, I prefer Pete over Eric Gaddetti, the mayor of Los Angeles, who was on the short list to be the Secretary of Transportation, only because LA's transportation is a disaster, and Pete at least has a plan. During his presidential campaign, one of the things he ran on was his desire to invest billions of dollars into improving our transportation infrastructure, which is more than just highways, but the highways are what are important to us as truck drivers. But he also plans to invest in rail and water and air and pipeline. But the good news is there's a portion of his plan, a significant portion, that is focused at highways. And he doesn't talk at length about public-private partnerships or tolls, which is always an issue for us. Everyone wants to build new roads, but they want tolls to pay for them. So he has a plan. I don't know that much about his politics to know exactly how he's going to lead. I would hope that he's going to continue the spirit of openness that U.S. Department of Transportation has had, and that whoever becomes the administrator of Federal Motor Carrier and Federal Highway, both of those administrators continue this 4-year streak of communication with the industries that they regulate. So, that I can't say if he's going to. I just started paying attention to him when I heard this news yesterday. So this is all fresh, just gut reaction to what I do know about him. But at least he has a plan. So that's a plus.
Okay. And so am I right in understanding this will replace Elaine Chao as the
correct.
Okay.
And, correct.
And you know, I saw Elaine Chao speak at Matt's 2018.
We were there like 2 years ago when we saw that. Yeah, 2018.
When we could still see the sky and other people and so one of the things that I didn't like that Elaine would do is she kept talking about Kentucky. Now I know we were in Kentucky, but I get the feeling, and because I've seen Mitch McConnell, her husband. And
yes.
He's, what, senator of Kentucky?
Yes, he's in Kentucky, so...
When an official focuses on their state, hey, there's 49 other of us.
Correct.
Right? This is a federal system. So what you just said, I didn't know that about Pete Buttigieg. I found him to be a... Oh, dear, I'm going to be in a lot of trouble. I thought he was a reasonable person. But I didn't know what he knew about transportation. So I like what you were saying about that, because he's already ahead of Elaine Chao in my book. Now, if he gets up and starts talking about, we're going to do this for Indiana, and Indiana this, Indiana's great and all, but again, there's 49 other states.
The only thing that scares me is him coming from Indiana and the debacle that the Indiana Toll Road became when they privatized it. Leased it to a company that went bankrupt, leased it to another company, and the state has run out of all the billions of dollars they got for that prepaid lease, and there's still 75 or 80 years on the lease where the state makes no money off their toll road. So I have to dig deep into his plan. We'll talk about this more in 2 weeks. I'll have a more informed opinion, but all I hope is that he learned his lessons from the way Indiana got slapped with their public-private partnership, and that is not part of his plan for roadways in the future.
We know that infrastructure is critical for transportation network and many other things. I mean, I've read articles, right? They talk about, social connectivity and without infrastructure, it's amazing. I mean, I think without any infrastructure literally is one of the secrets to becoming a third world country. Now,
yes, when you let your infrastructure crumble, that is where you're heading. Our infrastructure is part of what keeps us where we are.
Right. And so, and it's not like we're anywhere near that, but when you consider the cost, the planning, we all can name a highway section that's been under construction for a decade, right? Mm-hmm. And nobody knows why that is. So infrastructure is a very big deal. It's a very big job. And so... yeah, I'd be good. In fact, I think Elaine Chao already is, I think she was already doing something else. I read an article. She got tapped for, I don't know. She's doing something else, I think.
Yeah, so Elaine will leave USDOT. Ms. Chao will leave DOT. But we won't see any immediate change at Federal Motor Carrier, the agency that is most important to us, because we have an acting administrator who most likely will stay on through the transition. Our acting administrator was a career employee at FMCSA, so most likely he'll just step back into his career role as an attorney when they do finally appoint a new administrator of FMCSA. So I'm hoping at least in the beginning of this new administration, the Biden administration, we will continue to see that spirit of open communication with Federal Motor Carrier, and that will become infectious, if you will, to the new U.S. Secretary of Transportation, so that they continue as a policy from the top down the spirit of open communication with the industry.
So we're going to hope for the best, right?
Yes.
All right. So, hey, we got, and by the way, there's a kind of a follow-up, it sounds like. Fritz is asking, does the DOT care about a deleted pickup truck?
Motor carrier enforcement officers in most states are not emissions enforcement. They don't care. Certain states, New Jersey, they do care. Randomly, New Jersey will do roadside emissions testing on diesel-powered vehicles, and they are New Jersey state troopers with the power to write you a citation. California Air Resources Board care, and sometimes they operate in conjunction with California Motor Carrier Enforcement. But your average motor carrier officer could care less. He probably doesn't even know what he's looking at. He's taught to inspect brakes, tires, wheel ends, and those components, not emission control. Who cares are the DEP or DEC, your environmental conservation officers in the 48 states, and they do have the authority to stop and check your vehicle if you're rolling coal so it looks like something's wrong and they know it's a new vehicle that shouldn't be doing that. Or states like my home state of Pennsylvania, which have a annual safety inspection. Part of our safety inspection is a visual anti-tampering inspection on your emissions control system on heavy-duty diesel vehicles. The inspection mechanic can lose his license, his station license, as well as his mechanic license, if he gives you a safety sticker and he could tell your vehicle had been deleted. I cannot support deleting a vehicle, but I understand why we do it because of how unreliable some of these emission control systems are. Your likelihood of getting caught are slim to none, except in a few key states like California and New Jersey and Pennsylvania. But if you do get caught, the fines are high. You're violating federal regulations, federal laws. And if you do a delete and for some reason the vehicle has to go back to a dealer, once they realize it's deleted, they're not allowed to work on it. They're required to report it. And you're required to restore it to original equipment before you can put the vehicle back into service. So it's a big risk if you go ahead and delete your vehicle. But the short answer to your question, your average motor carrier guy at the scale could care less.
Wow. I'm gonna file that under questionable, right? Because it's kind of like many other things. I mean, you can fudge your taxes, you can speed here or there, but actually in the penalty,
it's all good
here,
till you get caught.
Right, and the penalty here sounds really high. That sounds awful. If you take it to the dealership and they've got to report it, that's where I'm gonna go with no. That sounds rough, but I totally understand. This is where what kind of like sensibility versus law. Sensibility meets the law. I'm not, you know, sounds pretty wild.
If you're gonna delete a vehicle, make sure you know how to work on it so it never has to go to a public garage where you might get reported.
Right. Know how to put it back.
Yes. Know what you're doing.
So to speak. Hey, listen, Fritz says, file that under yikes. listen, this is it, man. I know you've got to get back on schedule. We're at 12:28. I loved the show today. Again, guys, you know that every Wednesday at noon for 30 minutes, we've got Brian Riker, your DOT guy. Now, we're not on next Wednesday because it's Christmas week. And we may do a show on the 30th. I'm not sure yet, so we'll play it by ear. But starting in January 2021, it's every Wednesday, and we're going. We're going to 100 or 1,000 or whatever. So, Brian, man, thank you so much for your time. Great stuff.
You're welcome, Jay.
And I appreciate it. Happy holidays to you, man. Oh,
same
hey,
to you.
And we'll see you next Tuesday night.
Yes, I will be on the Tuesday night panel. I'm looking forward to it.
Transportation tax prep. So
yes.
If you're looking for a bedtime story, we're going to tell it Tuesday night.
Sounds good, my friend.
Okay, man. You take care. I'll talk to you later.
Have a good one.
All right. Bye. Be safe out there on the road. And peace out. I just ended the meeting with Brian. Guys, you know that this is DOT Compliance every Wednesday at noon, part of the Auto Transport Intel Live 4 times a week lineup. Tomorrow, we've got Dispatching Live at noon, 90 minutes with me and Sue searching load boards. And then Friday, Cars on the Move, live at noon with Ty, live from the Transport parking lot. And that's another 30-minute show. So, guys, thanks so much for saying hello, tuning in. Stay safe, and we'll see you tomorrow. Peace out.